DW Africa Link.
A very warm welcome to DW's Africa Link program. It's Wednesday, the 10th of October. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe, and we are coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany.
Coming up, Sierra Leone President Mada Bio cancels controversial deal with China to build them an airport, terming it unnecessary.
Chinese have been doing a wonderful job in Africa in general. But that does not mean that one should go in for a project that is not properly thought out and for a project which would possibly cripple the economy of the state.
Business, community and stakeholders back South Africa's new finance minister, Tito Mboweni. But can he turn the tables on the country's ailing economy?
Internationals will be like, are you sure you're the Minister of Finance? You're the fourth guy we're seeing in about 4 years. It's difficult for international investors, in my view, to take us seriously if we continue to change ministries like this.
Plus, EU security chiefs struggle over solution to the migration crisis.
But before all that, we hear other stories that have been making news around the world.
DW News.
My name is Jane Nyingi with DW News. At least 50 people have been confirmed dead in a grisly road accident in Western Kenya. The area county police commander James Mogera said the 67-seater bus veered off the road and the driver lost control. From the capital Nairobi, Andrew Asike with the latest.
County police commander confirmed the death toll, saying it could rise because some of the survivors were in critical condition.
As a result of that accident, we have lost several lives so far. We have been able to count 50 persons dead. A few survivors were rescued from the scene and taken to various hospitals.
The site of the accident is notorious for road accidents. President Uhuru Kenyatta tweeted his condolences and warned drivers to be careful on the roads.
Andrew Wasike there in Nairobi, Kenya. The European Union Election Observation Mission to Zimbabwe's 2018 July 30th elections has said the country's poll fell short of international standards. The mission, however, shied away from certifying the election as credible. From Harare, Privilege Mushaniri with more.
Opposition political parties contested the results at the Constitutional Court but lost the case, making way for Emmerson Mnangagwa to be inaugurated as the country's president. The observer mission, which was allowed into the country for the first time in 16 years, made a number of recommendations for the improvement of future elections. Mark Stevens, deputy chief observer, speaks.
It's fundamentally important for both the government and the opposition to pursue the democratic aspirations of the citizenry and to deliver the necessary reforms. With the lack of political will, it's very hard to achieve anything.
That was Mark Stevens, Deputy Chief Observer, Zimbabwe's July 30th elections. Now to Turkey, where the country's media has published CCTV footage of an alleged Saudi Arabian hit squad suspected of involvement in the disappearance of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Khashoggi was considered a dissident who wrote critical articles for publications, including the Washington Post. The U.S. says it's ready to assist the investigation into his disappearance. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. Angola has returned over 180,000 illegal immigrants from the Democratic Republic of Congo. Police say the crackdown targets foreign nationals suspected of engaging in the diamond smuggling business. Police in Belgium have raided a number of top-flight football clubs in the country as part of an investigation into money laundering and match fixing. Police are investigating unlawful payments made between agents, players and coaches from last season. And finally, at least 9 people have been killed and many more are missing after rainstorms caused flash floods in Mallorca. More than 300 rescuers have been deployed to search for the missing. For more news and information, head on our Facebook page, DW Africa. My name is Jane Nyingi.
And you're listening to DW's Africa Link program coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. We are live on Facebook page DW Africa And of course, we'd like to welcome your comments and feedback. Be sure to drop us a line.
That's right, indeed, Zippy. We start off in Sierra Leone, where all talk is about its president, Mada Bio's move to cancel a multi-billion-dollar deal with China to construct a new airport. The proposed Mamama International Airport was to be constructed by the China Railway 7th Group to the tune of $400 million.
The Sierra Leone government says the airport, which was approved by the former regime, was not a top priority and they would instead renovate the one which is there. I talked to Francis Bokari, a former permanent secretary in the Ministry of Transport and Aviation.
A major project of the magnitude of a new airport to replace the existing airport should be something that should be given a very careful thought. It should not be a one-man decision, it should not be a party decision, it should be a national decision.
Some believe there is a deeper reason why Sierra Leone turned down this offer. We all know China's presence in Africa and its economic implications has always been criticized. Do you believe there is a deeper reason rather than the fact that it was unnecessary?
What I think, no matter how very attractive the loan would have been, even if it were an interest-free loan, I think there is too much an outlay of capital to put out for a very poor country like this. This would have meant you were going to take the traffic that was meant to go by the ferry to the existing airport and put it on the road that means, that would be linking Mamama and Freetown in particular.
Looking at the wider picture, do you think it's time African countries relooked into deals which they have made with China?
Chinese have been doing a wonderful job in Africa in general. When it was time for infrastructure to be developed in Africa, quite a good number of our present development partners turned their back. But the Chinese came in handy and they were assisting in every area. But that does not mean that one should go in for a project that is not properly thought out and for a project which would possibly cripple the economy of the state.
And of course, I understand that the deal was also passed in Parliament. It was not a one-man decision.
Even if it was not a one-man decision, it was mainly a political party decision. Okay? We were advised even by the World Bank and the IMF and a number of other groups, they did not even listen to the side of the opposition.
That is Francis Bokari, a former permanent secretary in the Ministry of Transport and Aviation in Sierra Leone.
And, of course, we have some comments for you, starting with the live comments here. Bas says, kudos, President Bio, win of Sierra Leone, not only from the poisonous fangs of China, but also from other, you know... I don't know what to say anyway. Now, Nyakwa Nyandal says, I think here in Kenya they will soon start auctioning us, meaning the Chinese Zippy.
Oh, yeah.
Very sad situation here. Interesting comments.
Very controversial in Kenya. Let's not go there. But there's someone there who is saying, Joseph Albert says, this is the type of president all African countries need now. I wish to have him as a president in Liberia.
Ngum Ngafo says, he's a bang on council. Cancel and renegotiate. China is chasing their interests. Let's chase ours, avoid Chinese IMF and US loans at all costs. Govern well and stop stealing. Those are the most sustainable interventions.
I will read the last one here from Gadgad, who says, if Africa cannot develop her continent, then she should allow those that can do it. So thank you very much. You can also find more on this story on our website page, dw.com/Africa. And now to other stories which are making headlines around the world. European security chiefs struggled over solutions to the migrant crisis in a meeting of the G6 in Lyon, France. They mainly differed sharply over how best to tackle mass migration given the open internal borders within the European Union.
And according to the International Organization for Migration, IOM, over 80,000 migrants have made it across the Mediterranean Sea to Europe this year, and nearly 2,000 died in this attempt. Here's Sela Oneko with more.
For many European leaders, resolving the touchy subject of migration calls for different methods and approaches. France is calling for a multi-country solution to tackle migrant arrivals, working with governments around Europe and Africa. Italy, a frontline state for migrants crossing the Mediterranean, maintains the only way out is to deny rescue ships of non-governmental organizations permission to dock with migrants they save when boats are stranded or sinking. Italian Interior Minister Matteo Salvini says, although they have been called all kinds of names, including racists and ignorant, their migration management model of closing ports when necessary is becoming popular.
Sì, motivo per cui non capisco perché Macron debba accusare me, il governo italiano, di razzismo.
Yes, that's why I do not understand why the French President Emmanuel Macron accuses the Italian government and me of racism and selfishness. All the ministers at the table today supported Italy's idea that economic migrants cannot be welcomed in Europe, that to come to Europe you have to do it legally if you're escaping war. So if Macron agrees with us, we will fight the same fight. He could sometimes open the Ventimiglia border and stop insulting us.
Combattiamo la stessa battaglia, magari ogni tanto riapre la frontiera di Ventimiglia e la smetta di insultarci.
The European Union's Commissioner for Migration, Dimitris Avramopoulos, insists that no country in the European Union or out of the European Union can address these very challenging issues alone. We are ready, he says, to continue our cooperation. With little options for migrants to cross to Europe through Libya, Morocco has become a springboard for many who use the Strait of Gibraltar to get to Spain and cross over to other European countries.
Selo Neko with that report. And now we go back to Africa, and this time to South Africa, where the main opposition party, the Democratic Alliance, is pushing for wider scrutiny of President Cyril Ramaphosa and his cabinet after the resignation of a finance minister, Frankla Nene, who acknowledged meeting a business family linked to alleged corruption.
But as to Zokumalo reports from Johannesburg, some critics have warned that investors may not be impressed by the rapid changes in the finance ministry.
Five different finance ministers in 4 years. This is the story of South Africa since 2014. Among them is Nhlanhla Nene, who has served twice under former President Jacob Zuma, who sacked him in 2014, only to be reappointed by current President Cyril Ramaphosa. And this Wednesday, South Africans are still coming to terms with news of yet again a new finance minister, Tito Mboweni. Owen Nkomo, chief executive officer at Inkunzi Wealth, a financial solutions company, says changes in this key ministry has become too much.
Internationals will be like, are you sure you're the Minister of Finance? You're the fourth guy we're seeing in about 4 years. It's difficult for international investors, in my view, to take us seriously if we continue to change ministries like this.
However, economists and politicians have welcomed Mboweni's appointment as a perfect choice. During Mboweni's time as Labour Minister, he enacted legislation that empowered the employee, and he became a darling of labour unions. The ruling African National Congress, ANC, says the timely replacement will ensure stability in the economy, as Zizi Kodwa, the party's head of presidency, explains.
I think it's important to welcome the swift and decisive action. Very seasoned cadre, a member of the National Executive Committee, has been around.
Opposition party Economic Freedom Fighters, EFF, that had threatened taking to the streets if Nene was not sacked, are backing the new appointment. Here is Floyd Chivambu, EFF's deputy president.
In the recent past, he has been saying that there should be creation of a state bank. He has been saying there must be creation of a sovereign wealth fund. He has been saying that the state should be exposed to a certain degree in the actual process of extraction of mineral resources in South Africa.
South Africa is currently in a technical recession, and all eyes are now on Mboweni to save the economy.
That was Tuzo Kumalo reporting from Johannesburg. Now we go back to our top story because comments are flooding in. Sierra Leone's President Mada Bio has cancelled a $400 million airport deal with China. And off to the comments, Mohammed says, the president is right 100%. The construction of a new airport will be an economic waste as the current airport is being underutilized.
Will Dan, listening to us live there on Facebook, says China should allow leave our continent alone. We do not need them here.
And of course, you can keep on the debate on our Facebook page, DW Africa. We still want to hear more from you, and we'll definitely read your comments whenever you can, live here on air.
Welcome back to the program. My name is Ipora Nyambura.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe. We are also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. And in the next 15 minutes, we'll be hearing about life in two divided cities of Cameroon as the country slowly returns to normal, albeit some of the towns being deserted.
That part of the country is totally dead. The whole place is deserted. People have fled to the forest. And as people flee to the forest, the military raids their villages, kill their animals, eat them, burn their houses.
That will be one interesting one to hear there from Cameroon. So keep tuned.
Yes, of course. But before that, today is World Day Against the Death Penalty. For countries across the world that have abolished the death penalty, today is an opportunity to advocate for universal abolition of death penalty itself. The focus this year is on living conditions for prisoners on death row. In Uganda, there are 170 prisoners on death row in one of the country's correctional facilities near the capital, Kampala.
Despite efforts to have the death penalty scraped off, authorities have been reluctant, and until now at least 28 offences, including treason, carry and attract death penalty. Some death row inmates have been wrongly convicted and were lucky to get released, but others still languish in Uganda's congested prisons. From Kampala, Michael Wambi sent this report.
Edmary Mpaji spent 18 years in prison awaiting his execution. He had been wrongly convicted for murder, but as it later turned out, the person he was accused of killing was still alive. He told me about his experience in his cell just under the hangman's chamber at the condemned section of Luzira prison.
It was very difficult because we were allowed on 24 minutes in the morning, 24 minutes in the afternoon, which is very difficult because the walls are too high. You could come out in the morning when there's no sunshine, and you could come out in the evening when there's no sunshine. You take a full week or a full month without sunshine. And when never doesn't throw a epidemic disease could attack us, all of us would be affected.
Mpaji vividly remembers the execution by hanging in 1991 of 12 his cellmates. It is an experience that has got stuck in his memory.
The feeling for us was very worse because you could hear them singing. The chamber is on the first floor up. You could hear everything. Those people were singing, praising God. And some say, I'm innocent. I'm going to die, but I'm innocent. I've never committed a crime.
The current spate of murders around the country compelled Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni to hint on signing execution orders. But many observers think this could be used to settle political scores with opposition leaders who have been accused of treason in recent days. Livingstone Sewanyana is the Executive Director, Foundation for Human Rights Initiative. His organization has been advocating for the total abolition of death penalty in Uganda. He believes that it doesn't deter criminal acts, but instead rather a well-functioning judicial system.
As campaigners, we don't condone crime. Actually, crime must be punished in the severest form. And in our view, life imprisonment is the best substitute for those who commit such crimes so that they learn from their mistakes for the rest of their life. They get to understand why it is bad, why it is immoral, why it is illegal, why it is illogical to commit such crimes. But also, we should start rethinking about these crimes. There is no need to have 20 offences attracting the death penalty. Actually, it's the largest number in East Africa.
Behind the walls, prison authorities share similar concerns on why death penalty should be abolished, as explained by Frank Mbaine, the spokesperson of Uganda Prison Service.
For us, prisoners become our family. Now, you stay with a person 10 years, 15 years, that person becomes like your family. And that's why you cannot, even sometimes it becomes very difficult to slaughter a goat. Then what about to kill a person who has not died of natural death or who has not gotten a chance to go out and show the people that there is a difference from how the person entered and how he comes out? Because our evidence of performance is what the person does after coming out of the prison. But if he's hanged, he will never come back to tell his story. And that's why we don't stand with that.
That is Frank Baine, the spokesperson of Uganda Prison Services, in a report compiled by our own Mike Wambi in Kampala.
On the spot.
Now, life is slowly returning to normal in Cameroon as the country awaits for results from Sunday's presidential election. Whichever way the vote will go, the winner has a lot to deal with in the aftermath of an election that has left the country more divided than before.
It is the first election since the country plunged into political conflict along language lines, the francophone that have dominated Cameroon's politics and the English-speaking regions in the southwest and northwest of the country. Thousands fled to neighboring countries for their own safety and just a few returning. Our colleague Fred Muvunyi met with some of the victims of the conflict and filed this report.
Driving from Douala to Boya, one can only wonder how Cameroon has disintegrated so fast, thanks to its colonial history that divided French and English-speaking regions. The two cities are divided by a visible border. Heavy armed guards stand guard at the bridge that divides the two cities.
These are soldiers who are... These are soldiers in the white hillocks.
200 meters from the frontier, there is a police checkpoint. Identification have to be presented and vehicles are thoroughly checked. By the roadside, military men take cover and snipers are in strategic positions. This is Boya, my guide tells me.
Town is deserted. Even pharmacies and hospitals have been forced to shut down because of inadequate supplies.
Before the conflict, Boya was home to over 200,000 inhabitants, but many have fled due to the war between the armed separatists and the National Army. 29-year-old Avis has a harrowing story to tell.
That part of the country is totally dead. The whole place is deserted. People have fled to the forest. And as people flee to the forest, the military raids their villages, kill their animals, eat them, burn their houses. The whole place, particularly in my village, no one lives there any longer.
While he fights back tears, Echo tells me that 2 weeks ago, his two cousins were gunned down by government forces and his entire family has gone missing.
For the past 6 months, I have not talked to my brothers. I have not talked to any of my family members for the past 6 months. I don't know their whereabouts. The last time we spoke, they were running to the forest. And since then, I've not heard a word from them. I don't know if they are still alive or they are dead. The whole of my family. I'm here alone. How do I live without a family?
Unfortunately, Echo's story is not an isolated case. About 5 million minority Cameroonians live in fear. Emmanuel, a taxi driver in Boya.
We are tired of living in fear in our own area. We live in fear in our everyday life. We live in fear. It's not easy. So many people have died because of this. And for those of us who are left behind, when we see another day, we just say thank you, Lord, because it's not easy.
An eminent cardinal of the Catholic Church in Douala is, however, doing his bit. Christian Wigan Toumi has in the past tried to persuade President Paul Biya and Anglophone Cameroonians to sit down and find a solution to the crisis. So far, his efforts to bring the warring parties on the table have hit a snag, and he fears that the situation may soon explode.
And now, because of the extremism of the state not ready to dialogue and the killings that are going on, quite a number of people begin to sympathize with these boys.
The boys he's talking about are the armed separatists who are fighting for total independence of the Anglophone regions from La République du Cameroun. For now, Echo can hope that the situation improves so he can try to trace down his family.
Our own Fred Muvunyi on the ground in Cameroon. Now, in a previous show, we had a story about Maurice coming to the opposition leader, declaring himself the winner. And we asked you whether you agree that most opposition figures are as bad as the presidents they're standing against. And of course, some of you have comments. Starting with Zonepo says, possibly, but Kamto is better than Biya.
And Frida Anita says, Kamto did not proclaim victory. Moreover, what is wrong in saying that you will pass an exam after writing, even if the results have not been released?
And Epante says, Ivory Coast president was once in the opposition. He's talking about Alassane Ouattara. Look what fantastic work he's doing for his country. Many thanks for those comments. You still have much more right after this.
Living Planet Africa.
Now, birds, fish, and crocodiles are returning to the Diaoling National Park in Mauritania. And of course, Mauritanians have long believed these species were gone for good.
But the creation of the national park and sustainable water management have improved the situation. This report by Julia Heinrichmann is now presented by Assumpta Latus.
Year for year, the sea level at Diaoling National Park has been rising. A growing number of Mauritanians are having to leave their homes along the beach. The older generation still remembers what the beach used to look like. Saliu Diaye is among them.
Half the village used to be here. There were even houses on this very spot before it was all flooded. There are probably remains of houses on the seabed over there.
Zeyne El Abidine works in the nearby Diaoling National Park. He confirms the gravity of the situation.
I spoke to an old man who told me that in the 1980s, the ocean was 2 kilometers further back. Now look at the damage that the sea has done.
Living from farming alone is increasingly difficult for the people who are living near the beach. Land is in short supply due to the ground becoming oversalted. With their livelihoods destroyed, people are having to move inland. But the Diaoling National Park, 12 kilometers away, provides them with alternative sources of income. A few years ago, the national park was home to far fewer animals. Today, it's a breeding ground for over 300 species of birds, including flamingos. The national park is on Mauritania's side of the Senegal River Delta. The river provides both fresh water and salt water. Fishermen sell their fish across the country and even in neighboring Senegal. Sheikh Ahmed is the head of fishing corporation. He says nature conservation in this area is very beneficial. It protects the ecosystem and also creates jobs.
In the past, people lived here from farming too. But really, fishing makes most sense. We can make a living from fishing all year round. We benefit from the loch and the basin. There are lots of fish here.
The abundance of fish is a recent development. 30 years ago, the region was left ravaged by a dam built in the mid-1980s to supply Mauritania, Senegal, Gambia, and Mali with fresh water. It devastated the natural environment. Zeyne El Abidine from the Diaoling National Park explains.
The construction of the dam completely destabilized the ecosystem. It was destroyed. The natural balance was destroyed, the balance between salt water and fresh water. And that wasn't all. The fresh water was blocked and couldn't reach the national park.
Years later, the problem was addressed with the construction of locks. Built with the help of the German KfW Development Bank and the German Development Agency, GIZ. The park authority has demarcated fishing zones and makes sure the fishermen respect spawning seasons.
That report was compiled by Julia Heinrichmann. And now, Isaac, let me take you to a different story because women everywhere are sharing stories of sexual harassment and gender inequality, but men still are not really listening.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Nigerian author and feminist icon Chimamanda Adichie said at the Frankfurt Book Fair. And my question is, so why are you men not listening to the
women? On a personal note, you know, I beg to differ there. I'm listening. Me, Madame Chimamanda, wherever you are, not all of us are not listening. But anyway, our commentators, as usual, have their comments. Jong says the physical world itself is inequality. It was made so from the beginning of time. Can humans change it?
And there's someone here who says, Gadgad says the issue of equality is a very complex issue.
Well, one Olayinka says, I love her writing skills. My favorite of her work are Purple Hibiscus and Americana. Many thanks for those comments. Keep sharing on our Facebook page, W Africa. And I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura.
Bye for now.
DW. Made for Minds.